Welcome, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of LSEG Post-Trade Solutions Ahead of the Curve. It might sound a little different where we were Acadia's ahead of the curve, but now we're LSEG Post-Trade Solutions. So welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I am again with my colleague and my coworker, Stuart Smith. He is co-head of business development. So welcome, Stuart. And here we are again.
Hi, thank you very much, Sean. Nice to be here.
Great. You know, we've talked about a lot of different subjects over our time on the podcast. And, you know, I think, you know, right now at the filming of this particular podcast, we're here in October. Last month in September 19th, ISDA published SIM 2.7. And, you know, just like they always do, this is a normal year-end recalibration, goes into effect in December 7th. And, you know, I would say it's uneventful except for a couple of things that we've kind of looked at when they published the model. So we're here to kind of talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little bit about what has changed. What are the big headlines? I'm not going to steal your thunder, so I'm going to hand it to you in a second. But we're going to dive into it. It's obviously very important for us as a business. Goes without saying, it's important for the industry. SIM has been crucial for the trading and margining and collateralization of uncleared derivatives. So it's important to us. And I think, you know, looking at the recalibration this year, it's very, very interesting. So why don't we start with what is changing? What are the big things that we're seeing? And what are the things that you have observed from comparing 2026? Sorry.
SIM 2.6
to SIM 2.7. Yes.
So yeah. So, I mean, let me look at the headlines first. We've often felt like the bringer of bad news at these recalibration events the last few years. We've been persistently telling people how much more they're going to have to post when the SIM recalibration goes through. In fact, this year we're doing the opposite. So this is the first year in quite a long time where we're saying there's going to be a pretty large reduction in the SIM that's been posted across the industry. And what does that mean? So if we look at phase five and phase six firms, so these are the hedge funds, the buy side participants in SIM rather than the larger banks. They post around about $130 billion of initial margin today. So we think on December the 7th, when this goes live, they're going to get returned about $20 billion of that 130 that they're posting. So that's a pretty significant number. And that's a pretty big reduction in that ISDA SIM. And like we said, this is the first time in since COVID effectively, where we've seen these numbers coming down as opposed to going up. So it feels very much like we went through peak SIM. And we're now kind of on a little bit of a downward trend, at least for now.
Okay. So I think we have something to show. So let's pull it up and show some of like what's changing, why is it changing? You mentioned COVID. That was the stress period that had been in the model for the last few years.
Well, interestingly, it was never a stress period.
Ah.
It was one of the 3 years that they take as the calibration period. But it was probably the most stressful year for lots of reasons, but certainly financially stressful as well.
You're talking about work from home?
Talking about my homeschooling experience. That's the most stressful thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
But yeah, that 2020 was an incredibly stressful year from a financial point of view. And it didn't go in the stress period. That was just part of our 3-year historic look back that was used to calibrate the model. So really, you know, in 2.6, you've got two full stress years in there. You've got 2008, 2009 with the financial crisis, and you've got 2020, the COVID lockdown period, with the huge equity and commodity shocks that we saw throughout that year. And you know, unsurprisingly, if you put in two very stressful years into a calibration, you get out a model which is calibrated to a very stressful, you know, level. And we saw that through the high SIM postings that came off the back of that. So what happens, this 3-year window rolls forward. And it rolled forward from 2020 being the earliest year the calibration for this year, 2.7. 2021 is the earliest year. So 2020 falls out. It doesn't fall out completely. You know, it was such a stressful year. It now replaces part of that 2008-2009 period as the stress period that we use. But remember, that's only 1 year. So now we can only have parts of each of those to make up that stress part of the calibration. And inevitably, that brings the calibration down. If you look at 2023, by comparison, it wasn't an uneventful year. But compared to 2008, 2009, or 2020, it was a very uneventful year if you look at it in that perspective.
So 2008, 2009, I mean, by all accounts, is the stress period.
Yeah.
That will remain as part of the plus one for quite a while.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
This isn't something is to discuss publicly.
Yeah.
But yes, I think there were some unique things that happened in that period.
Right.
And the way the spreads moved, I think very unlikely we'll see something as impactful as that and replicated again. So yeah, I think it's very likely that'll stay in for the duration.
Okay. Well, I guess we can switch gears a little bit now and kind of talk about like what's the implications? What's some of the things that you've been hearing from the market? I know it's fairly new. You know, we do have a tool that can compare the two models side by side and see the impact. And I know you talked to Risk and had an article published recently and kind of talked over some of those implications. What are some of those things? Now, you know, you would think getting more collateral back into the system is a good thing. I think generally it's probably going to be welcome, but what are some of the observations from your perspective, or have you heard anything from clients yet?
So
wait and see?
We know that banks are constrained either by capital or by their LCR metric. So they're constrained as to the business that they can do. So the general perception is that reductions in costs such as these should free up banks to do more business. So currently, though, those guys, rather than being able to do it, and they want, they're constrained by what's sat on their desk, what access to resource they have. This should free up a very considerable amount of resource for those guys to be able to do more. So I think what you should expect to see in December and going into January is an increase in the business that's coming out of big banks, an increase in the competition, more people that can quote against different derivatives, less people that are locked out from doing trading because of the position that they're on in their desk, which I think is a great thing, right? That's going to
benefit. Like positive, right? Right off the bat.
Yeah.
Okay.
And at the same time, you know, hedge funds are receiving back a pretty substantial amount of money that they've had tied up in collateral, which obviously they hate.
Yeah.
And that money you would expect to be put to use. So I think you can expect to see a pretty, you know, a pretty high degree
or
of
ease up their funding. So a lot of hedge funds have a percentage of the fund has to be in cash, which they have to raise through, let's say, repo trading.
Yeah.
Maybe that will adjust and it'll be a little bit easier for them, or it'll be less costly, perhaps.
That's a good point.
To raise that cash. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, hedge funds, you know, although equity and bond posting is more common, there's still the vast majority of collateral gets posted in cash.
Yeah.
And this is a large lump of cash going back. So yeah, I think you should expect to see a decent uptick in business, and the numbers we're talking about are, yeah, they're significant numbers around the quantity of money that's moving. So
would we say 70 billion or 40 billion? I've seen.
So 20 billion in each direction. So 20 billion going to the hedge fund and 20 billion going to the bank.
Yep.
That excludes actually the phase 1 to 4, the interdealer market, which we know is much bigger than the phase 5 to phase 6 market. So yeah, I mean, there's another pretty large sum of money. We did a little bit of analysis into there. We haven't run the whole thing.
Right.
But again, we think that 10 to 20% reduction in posted collateral is pretty consistent across that group too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, these significant numbers.
So do you think so on the dealer side, do you think there's going to be balance sheet implications because of the cash that's being freed up on the cap? You mentioned capital. Do you think that it would be worth it for firms to kind of do that analysis now? Do you think they're doing that and kind of figuring out, well, if I'm getting all this extra cash coming in because just, you know, by virtue of the model change, what is that going to mean for my business? It, as we said, it is a net positive, but balance sheet is a thing, and they have to consider that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure phase 1 to 4 banks are doing this.
Yeah,
I think everyone got so burnt during that post-COVID calibration where the opposite happened,
mm-hmm.
and the numbers went up by some 20-30% that, yeah, a little people were shocked into action to make sure they were on top of this.
Yeah. I think going down is probably just
it's a little bit easier.
A little bit easier to deal with. It's a, I guess it's a good problem to have.
Absolutely. But if you look at just the position that you're going to receive, you know, tens, hundreds, or even billions of dollars on one day in December, you should probably know what you're going to do with that money.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, in the phase one to four banks, I'm sure they have this covered, and they have to from a regulatory point of view. They've got to be doing their impact analysis. The phase five to six, we know that there's only really a growing awareness that this happens every year.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those shocks have helped them be aware that this is happening. But I think they're getting more in tune to the fact that, yeah, I need to be on top of this and know what's going to happen. Just from a silly point of view, like the faster I can invest that money and do something with it is going to easily pay off my cost of having done that analysis. Yeah. So definitely, I think those firms should be looking at this and making a plan for, you know, where that collateral goes on the day they get back.
So it's close of business the 6th. 7th is the effective date. And I think that Monday, which I think...
Yeah, the Monday's the 9th. Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Yeah.
Just, you know, people listening to this, they know the order of operations and how it's going to work. Most people, I think, running the model kind of know that, but it's probably worth mentioning.
There's a, you know, so I think, you know, if we just kind of look broadly at the change, and again, at the recording of this, it's fairly new, so we're looking at it.
You said that there's more to come really on the dealer side to do more analysis to see what the impact is, and I think we've touched on some things. Going into, you know, into the future next year, there's going to be the semi-annual recalibration is going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know if a lot of people are aware of that as well, but that's something that was done really last year and agreed to with the regulators. And I guess there was one other point that I wanted to make. I think, you know, as we're talking about this and like kind of, not that we're cheering that everything's going down, I think it's worth just mentioning that through the process of recalibration, the regulators are completely involved in all of this and sign off on the new model.
Absolutely.
So it's not just ISDA saying, hey guys, we're taking out the year 2020 and here's the model.
Yeah.
All the regulators need to look at it, need to sign off on it, and everyone needs to be on board, which is what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you look at what those large banks have to do. I mentioned they have to do an impact analysis. So this is a model change for most banks. They need to do an impact analysis before they can release a model change. What does that mean for a big bank? You know, they've got an underlying requirement to hit this 99% of the VAR of that 3+1 period.
Yep.
So they need to go back and redo that back testing with this new model to make sure that the numbers they now get still cover that. Now, that's that impact analysis from that point of view is dead easy when the numbers go up.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to post 30, 40% more SIM next year. Well, if it covered it this year, it's definitely going to cover it next year, then this is fine. But when it comes down, actually doing an impact analysis is much tougher because you need to demonstrate to a regulator, yeah, I'm still safe posting this much margin. No, I don't introduce lots of exceptions to my model. It still predicts what I needed to predict and doesn't cause me issues. And I'm still comfortable now with the counterparty credit risk that I'm running. So yeah, there is quite a bit more work to do probably there for banks to be able to justify that decrease. And of course, it's the banks who remain ultimately responsible for showing their model hits the regulatory requirement. You know, that's not something is to do. That's something the bank does.
Correct.
As part of their responsibility.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that we noted that,
yeah.
You know, and not, like I said, not just applauding that there's more cash.
And I think you can argue as well. I mean, you know, at this point, we use this 3+1 methodology,
mm-hmm.
which obviously is what's driving the change that we're seeing. You know, you may look at the world today and say, I feel like I'm in a very risky position right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the world feels in a volatile period, although it's not playing out in the financial landscape right now.
Right.
But, you know, there are several wars ongoing. There is an awful lot of risk out in the world. And you know, in some ways, you know, while two financially, you know, flat benign years are allowing this number to come down, you know, I think you can make an argument to say, how is the model somewhat forward-looking,
mm-hmm.
as to the risks that may be there looking out for us? Now, that's what the stress year is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's definitely got to be some concern there about looking into the future and saying, you know, we're in a unstable position right now, it feels.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think, you know, I think we can assume that, and we've already seen a slight change. So the model is not that old, right? If we're talking about 10 years from the beginning of that white paper and the idea of SIM till now, a little over 10 years, We've seen COVID and that period, and the regulators responded saying that it wasn't nimble enough, hence the discussions with all the global regulators and the agreement to have a semi-annual recalibration, which will happen next year. I guess we can assume that this model will continue to evolve. It'll continue to change, and it'll probably be more reactive than proactive, I would think. Because it's hard, you know, these things are hard to predict. That's why there's a back test in any model, any risk model. We have to look at the past to try to predict the future to ensure that, you know, we're covering as much, you know, that 99% 10-day M4, et cetera, et cetera. And it works for the most part. But yeah, it's an interesting, that's an interesting thought because it's true. I think a lot of folks, and I'm not going to speak for everyone, probably feel that way sometimes when you think about it. It's like, well, what's happening today? Right? Are we covered today? But there is always a top up. There's always things that you can do to add to the model in terms of, you know, more collateral. So that's always an option for firms if they feel like certain positions are going in a certain direction, whether it's whether you say right or wrong direction, that's all subjective. So yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, next year we'll see when is the next calibration, or it's not going to be a model change, it'll be a recalibration.
So going into next year, I mean, that process has already started. So, you know, it kicked off, it kicks off next month or so, collecting data. So the model will be released, effective date in July. And then, so we won't actually quite get to next year because the next one will come out in January 2026. Effectively to next year. And is there a little bit cheating in that they're allowing those processes to overlap to buy themselves a little bit more time to be able to do those calibrations? But if you think about the challenge they've got, you know, a large number of banks in that governance committee. This isn't a model where they can just decide what the change is. That's a large group that's driving that, which is lots of benefits from that diverse point of view, but does mean that they've got to get a lot of work done, a lot of agreement created within a shorter time period. Inevitably, that's going to also reduce the time that we have to implement that model and take it live. So while you should expect smaller changes going forward, you know, still a change, still going to be a model change, still has to be validated. You need to get ready for how you're going to do that a little bit quicker. So hopefully everybody's taken this opportunity to refine their processes, make sure that they're nimble enough to do this in a shorter time period. ISTA hasn't let us know yet how long we're going to have. You know, we estimate 3 to 6 weeks from sort of release of the model to the effective date going forward, just on the basis it's half of what we had currently. And we'll have to see, you know, how that plays out and how long we get to do that in.
Yeah, we had kind of a taste of it in May of last year, kind of like that middle of the year change. But yeah, it'll be an uptake. It'll be a big change. I think firms hopefully are preparing for it. Yeah. We're obviously as a firm preparing for it. And, you know, as always, we're here to help and to navigate and help our clients navigate through that. So it should be, it's interesting, and who knows what the future will hold. I mean, volatile times, it seems like are continuing. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, the overall landscape of whether it's SIM or, you know, other types of risk mitigants change over time. But that was great, Stuart. Was there anything else? I know we kind of covered everything that we wanted to cover, I think.
Today. I guess maybe just, what else? Just a what warning else? Out there to people that we talked about SIM coming down. There is, of course, one area it's going up dramatically.
Ah, right.
So RMBS, CMBS, so effectively aggregated consumer debt. This area has gone up spectacularly. So it hasn't quite tripled, but it's almost tripled in risk weight. So if you're trading in this area, you need to be particularly careful because you're going to buck the
trend. If you're concentrated in that, then, you know, I guess the promise of it coming down is not going to happen. In fact, it's going to go much higher than if you know, from the last model. Yeah.
So when we did a sweep across portfolio, a huge range of outcomes for different agreements, but some of the biggest changes actually were increases of up to about 50%.
Wow.
Presumably on portfolios concentrated in those asset classes.
And that is that coming from a particular year that we've shown up there, or is it
So I think it's hard to explain exactly where that comes from. I think you've got to assume it comes from 2023 coming into that calibration.
Yeah.
What happened in 23? Interest rate rises, of course. And of course, those things are going to drive an impact on consumer debt.
Yeah.
So if you think my mortgage certainly went up, I'm sure everyone else's did. I'm sure everyone else's credit card rates increased a bit as well.
Yes, they did.
And you know, the consequence of that is you're a little bit more likely to default. And therefore, the value of those instruments goes down a bit.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, I think that's the one area just to be aware of.
Yeah.
Don't get caught out.
That's great. All right. Well, thanks for mentioning that, because I know that that was part of kind of the write-off that we were looking at. So, yeah, thank you, Stuart, for that. Anything else before we close? I know, you know, this is a topic that we'll continue to focus on and make sure that, you know, our clients are ready, and we do calculate SIM for quite a bit of the market. So it's near and dear to our hearts. It's very important for us and our clients. Anything you want to close on before we end?
No, I think just that point of that point. It's worth taking a look.
Yeah.
Because if you just, you know, your treasury is just that little bit more effective on the day you get that cash back, it's going to make it worth your while. So
yeah,
it's worth taking a look, and it's worth planning ahead.
Yeah, I think there's more to come, right? We'll see the impact of this in real time, and when it goes into effect, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the impact's going to be with all this, you know, this freed up collateral potentially will be. Okay,
fantastic.
Well, as always, it's great talking to you, and I'm sure we'll be back again in this great studio. Love this studio. Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining this episode of Ahead of the Curve. I found it very interesting. I hope you have. And you can find us on Acadia.inc and YouTube, Spotify, and wherever else you stream your favorite podcasts. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again soon.